Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, December 30th, 2016. County commissioners in Yei River State say insecurity is so rampant they cannot leave Yei.
They may need mobility. You know, the vehicles which used to be for Morobo, one is called in an ambush and it was destroyed. And we as a government, we are trying to get the mobility for them.
And there's no celebrating for South Sudanese students who say they cannot get home for the festive season.
My parents are very much concerned that if one goes, probably maybe something will happen on the road.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The governor of Yei River State says insecurity and the economic crisis have forced more than six of his newly appointed commissioners to stay in the capital, Yei, rather than reside in their respective counties. The commissioner of Mugwo County, who is also staying in Yei, confirms that rebel activities in his county have caused fear and panic among residents. First Vice President Taban Dengai is expected to visit Yei Town tomorrow to assure residents of the government's commitment to restoring peace in the area. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Governor David Lokonga says the commission of Mugo, Morobo, Lujulo, Mukaya, Otogo, Tore and Kopera counties have not showed up at their respective workstations since he appointed them more than 4 months ago, due in part to insecurity in those areas.
There is an economic difficulty that are facing the whole country. They may need mobility. You know, the vehicles which used to be for Morobo, once it fell in an ambush and it was destroyed. And we as a government, we are trying to get the mobility for them.
At least three top Yei River State government officials, including Deputy Governor Abraham Wani, resigned in 3 months citing rampant insecurity and violence in the area. An identified gunman abducted the commission of Yei River State's Kangapo County earlier this month while attending funeral prayers in his village. His whereabouts remains unknown. Governor Lokonga says he hopes the security situation will improve so officials can return to work in their respective counties earlier next year. And the governor insists there has not been any fighting in the area in recent weeks.
We are putting all the emphasis to make sure that they have mobility, they can go. And it seems to be there is a possibility of response from even those who might have taken up arms.
Natalino Lasoba, the Mugo County Commissioner who is staying in Yei about 14 miles from his home county, says despite being far from his workstation, he is in touch with some of the residents. Lasuba says many residents have either fled to neighboring Uganda or the Democratic Republic of Congo or are hiding in bush due to the ongoing violence.
There is still a continuous activity of the rebels. We have talked to them, negotiated with them, that the government troops are now quite staying in their own places, that there is ceasefire, they should respect the ceasefire. But up to the present, I'm talking, they're attacking some of our outside posts. They come, attack, hit, and they run. So this is what is making the people not to come to the town. And again, they close the roads. They don't want people to come.
The United Nations confirms that hundreds of thousands of people from South Sudan's Equatorial region, especially those from Yei River State, have fled their villages and sought refugee in neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo in recent months. Yasmin Soka, who recently led a UN Human Rights Council team on a 10-day visit through South Sudan, including Greater Equatoria, warned that ethnic cleansing is taking place in parts of South Sudan and that the country was on the brink of genocide, a claim SPLA military spokesman Brigadier Lul Rai Kong dismissed, describing it as mind-boggling. A Morobo County resident who does not want to be identified for fear of retribution says the situation in Morobo County, for months a battleground for government forces and some militias, remains precarious. He says he and many area residents are hiding near the border with the Democratic Republic of Congo because they feel unsafe in their homes and even in churches.
The general situation looks scary because when all this happened, people are not able to even reach to the church as they keep hiding in fear of the government soldiers. So the general situation is not all that good because people could just stand from afar as they have a look on what is happening.
Lasuba says he wants First Vice President Guy to explain to citizens why some SPLA-IO forces are still fighting when many opposition politicians have joined the transitional government of national unity.
What we want from our Vice President is to state to these guys to whom do these people in the bush belong, because there is confusion. Some of them say they are for IO. Then we said, if you are for IO, the government is already formed where IO are participating. Most of the big people are now in EA. Their army is in EA. Politicians are in Juba. And then if they belong to IO, they should come out.
Lasuba says he does not understand why anti-government forces continue to fight rather than peacefully state their grievances to the government. Governor Lokonga says the state has invited Guy to convince the armed men fighting in the state to lay down their arms and use dialogue to address their grievances with the government. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
South Sudanese students in Uganda say they cannot go home for the holidays this year because of the rampant insecurity across the country. They also say money for travel is a problem due in large part to the country's economic crisis. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Many of the students enrolled at universities and other institutions of higher learning in Uganda say this is the first time since they came to Uganda that they have been unable to be with their loved ones back home in South Sudan during the festive season. Karala Ebele Adelino, a student at the Uganda Aviation School in Kampala, says he never imagined spending Christmas away from his family.
All the years I've been here in Uganda, I've been here for like 7 years, and each year at the end of this season, we all go back to Juba where we enjoy our Christmas with families together. And this year is the first year that I've been caught up here because of the issues there.
Most students cannot afford to travel by air, so if they do go back, they must use the unsafe Juba Nimle Road that connects South Sudan to Uganda. Emmanuel Turo, who is studying for a master's degree in international relations and diplomacy at Cavendish University, says his parents advised him against taking that risk.
Now there is a very many issues in the Nimule Road. My parents are very much concerned that if one goes, probably maybe something will happen on the road.
There have been several reports this past year of gunmen attacking buses, trucks and other vehicles traveling the Juba Nimule Road. In some cases, passengers are killed. The gunmen rob commuters of their money and other personal belongings. In October, armed men set an eco bus on fire that was traveling from Juba to Kampala. Victor Sabun, a student at the Kampala-based International University of East Africa, says his parents pleaded with him to stay in Uganda this year because of deadly incidents along the Juba Nimule Road and rampant insecurity across parts of South Sudan.
My father or my mother, they are worried about the road because there are robbery, there are killing going on that side of the Nimule. So even in South Sudan, looting is taking place.
Adelino says reports he and his colleagues receive from home are often depressing and discourage students like him from going home for holidays.
In the morning you get a phone call from Juba that so-and-so, your neighbor is dead. We don't know how, but he was shot maybe at night. Imagine, he was killed at night, he was robbed, he was murdered, and there was no justice. So most of people in our country right now, people really are not feeling secured. Everyone is scared
Sabun says the depressing news from South Sudan also affects his ability to concentrate on his studies.
One day I was studying for my exams, and suddenly one of my colleagues called me that his friend is shot. So such thing will affect you when you are studying. Like you think, what's going on really in South Sudan?
Turo points out he also realized going home was going to put a financial strain on his parents, who are already struggling to make ends meet and pay his tuition.
My parents could not raise money for me to go back and later on also raise another one for me to come here and also pay the border, because we understand we need to pay $50 in the border.
Turo says he misses his country, relatives and friends, but realizes that the decision to remain in Uganda was a good one. Sabun says, however, that spending Christmas away from home did not feel like Christmas at all.
You know, it's too bored to spend a Christmas in a foreign country where you don't have relatives, no friends to visit. You know, festive season is to visit each other, interacting and, you know, such kind of things.
Students in Uganda like Sabun hope by this time next year, peace will be restored and they will be able to return home and spend their holidays with loved ones. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Kampala.
And staying in Uganda, many South Sudanese who were forced to flee to Uganda because of the ongoing insecurity at home say they are doing all they can to learn Uganda's main language. They say speaking Luganda makes it easier to communicate with locals and integrate into Ugandan society. Magume Davis Wakarinj has the story for VOA from Kigali, Rwanda.
25-year-old Peter Barnabas communicates in Luganda, Uganda's most common spoken language, as he batters with a shopkeeper. Barnabas says he has been in Uganda for half his life. Now a second-year student of accounting at Uganda's Christian University, Mukono, Barnabas says he began studying from Uganda directly from primary school. He says over the years he has been able to learn the Luganda and the Chole languages.
You know, like any other person, you come in a place where you don't understand what people are talking about. You always think that they are talking about you. I would always like intimidate those guys and ask them, what are you talking about? Are you guys about me? And I would be like, you know, for us, sometimes they think that we are those hostile guys, yeah. So when you like asking something with kind of anger, they will run away and they think, this is a Musudan, he's going to fight you.
It wasn't easy dissuading Ugandans from that stereotype. But then Barnabas says he learned what to do.
I had some friends from different tribes, Baganda and some others from North. The way they did their thing impressed me, and that's what made me to cope up with them. And sometimes I end up learning something like some word in their languages. And doing that, I find myself almost like a citizen.
Aside from his slightly darker complexion and imposing height, one would not be able to tell Barnabas was South Sudanese. He says learning the local language has helped him integrate into Ugandan society, so he no longer feels out of place. Gabriel Kerr, a South Sudanese studying for a master's degree in journalism at Makerere University, agrees that knowing Luganda enables a foreigner to easily mingle with Ugandans.
Well, they expect you to know their language. For example, in the transport, you find some conductors speaking, you know, Luganda, and you may not even know a single word of Luganda. For example, you want to tell a conductor to stop the car. If you say in English, they would respond in Luganda, and the car is still moving. So you wonder if they don't understand you.
25-year-old Deng Michael Chol says he learned Swahili as a small child when his family fled neighboring Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp in 1997 due to fighting between the then rebel SPLA and the Sudanese army. Chol says learning Swahili when he was 5 years old was not difficult. Chol says he would go to a market and get a fair bargain for a purchase because he knew the local language. Now, as he pursues a bachelor's degree of economics at St. Lawrence University in Kampala, Chol says he's learning Luganda.
As we talk now, we're already part of East Africa, and this language may help you in coping. Suppose you're a business person in future, it will help you cope with the region at large. So it's a great advantage.
Kenya's official languages are Swahili and English. but more than 60 local languages are spoken in the country. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese security agents confiscate the latest editions of two Sudanese newspapers. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you feel loved and appreciated?
Even when most time I do something good and people praise me, ask somewhere like that thing you did, and that most time it makes me feel good.
What makes me feel loved, it's internal. I hardly have somebody who, you know, makes me feel loved. Although I would say my parents inspire me and push me on, but they have a strange way of doing it. Most time it's through criticism. When you are criticized, it spurs me up.
When actually people have concern about me, because there are different languages of love, okay? Some people do appreciate the word aspect of love. Some people, spoken words per se. Some people it is gift, so. But for me, what makes me feel love, like I said earlier, is when people care for me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Journalists took to the streets in Sudan yesterday to protest a move by government security agents that blocked Sudan's Al Jarida and Al-Qarazaza newspaper from distributing their editions at newsstands this week. Journalists are demanding that the government respect their constitutional rights of freedom of speech and freedom of press. VOA fellow Nadia Taha has more from Washington.
Sudanese journalists yesterday demonstrated in front of the National Council for Press and Publication, or NCPP, in Khartoum. The NCPP is a Sudanese government agency that writes rules for journalists. A human rights organization based in Washington, D.C., called Freedom House, says a largest proportion of the NCPP members are appointed by the president. Ahmed Al-Sheikh, senior editor of Al Jarida, says his newspaper does not have a political agenda. He says they are only trying to inform citizens about what is happening in their country.
Al Jarida is independent, fair, and not partisan to any political party. It publishes news as it is. When news movement called for civil disobedience, we wrote many news stories about it, so the government became angry. Although we talked with many leaders from ruling party, so it punished us.
Al-Sheikh says Sudanese National Intelligence and Security Service, or NIS, ordered their newspaper to ban two columnists from writing their columns.
Today, we demonstrate in front of National Press Council to demand it to intervene for protecting newspaper and journalists from violation.
Faisal Al-Bakhir, coordinator of a group called Journalists for Human Rights, says it's not first time NIS has confiscated newspapers and prohibited news outlets from publishing.
Action of the National Security Service, it's illegal, it's against the law, it's against the constitution of Sudan, because freedom of expression and freedom of press is guaranteed by the constitution. But always it sounds that the National Security Service in Sudan, they are beyond the laws, they are beyond the constitution, and they don't care about respecting the rights of freedom of expression and freedom of press.
The journalists protesting in front of NCPP handed a letter to NCPP which details their complaint against increasing violence of press freedom in their country. Freedom House reported that press status in Sudan is not free. It says authorities in Khartoum maintain a tight grip in Sudan's media sector. Al Jarida newspaper has been confiscated 11 times this month across the country. For VOA News, I'm Nadia Taha in Washington.
2016 began with a four-month-old peace agreement signed by President Kiir and SPLAIO leader Riek Machar, with the hopes of ending the deep-seated animosity between the warring parties and establishing a transitional government of national unity in South Sudan. But those hopes were dashed when a fresh wave of violence broke out in the capital in July, which quickly spread to other parts of the country. Gang rape, killings, and other atrocities occurred in Juba and other towns and villages. And after a week-long visit by a United Nations team, warnings of genocide surfaced. For the first half of the year, the focus was on the formation of the transitional government as well as security arrangements in Juba. After months of negotiations, rebel leader Riek Machar returned to Juba in April and was sworn in as the country's first vice president. After fleeing violence in July, Machar said that his party has not given up on the 2015 peace deal. He told VOA that there is still a chance to implement the peace agreement, despite the outbreak of violence that derailed the little progress that was made.
For the agreement to be resuscitated, it must be recognized that it has been violated. It has collapsed. But since the grantors are the heads of the region of IGAD, and also the five countries that are representing the five regions in Africa, and also the Troika and the UN, since some of them are grantors, some of them are witnesses, and since the agreement was drafted and imposed, for that matter, which both accepted by the IGAD and the international community, they have to find a way of facilitating this agreement.
The relative peace across the country was short-lived after violence erupted in the presidential compound, forcing Machar to flee the country and leave the August 2015 peace deal in limbo. The United Nations panel of experts on South Sudan declared a de facto failure of the peace deal in their latest assessment, which has plagued the transitional government since its formation in April. Warnings from Adama Dieng, the United Nations Special Advisor on the Prevention of Genocide, dominated headlines late this year as leading experts at the UN warned of Rwanda-like genocide looming in South Sudan. Yasmin Suka, chairman of the Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan, reiterated Dieng's concerns at an emergency session at the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva earlier this month.
The UN survey found that 70% of women in the camp had been raped since the conflict erupted, the vast majority of them not by unarmed, unknown men, but by police or soldiers, and a staggering 78% of them had been forced to watch someone else being sexually violated.
The UN reported in September that the number of refugees from South Sudan surpassed the 1 million mark after renewed violence in the capital in July forced hundreds of thousands to flee to Uganda, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and other neighboring countries. The mass exodus of South Sudanese made the humanitarian situation one of the world's worst humanitarian disasters, according to the United Nations. Some 3 million South Sudanese are now displaced, and more than 200,000 are seeking shelter in UNMISS camps. The worsening developments in South Sudan led President Salva Kiir to issue an apology earlier this month. He also urged citizens to work harder toward achieving peace in the country.
I'm asking you, the people of South Sudan, to forgive me. I read this sentence again. I said, I'm asking you, the people of South Sudan, to forgive me for any mistakes I might have committed. This is a spirit that our country needs, and we must act now. I pledge to all of you, fellow citizens, that the new year dawns on us. I will leave no stone unturned in the search for peace, reconciliation, and unity in our great country.
After UN peacekeepers failed to respond to calls for help when the violence broke out in Juba, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called for the UNMISS force commander, Lieutenant General Johnson Magoha Kimani Ondieki of Kenya, to be replaced. The move drew immediate criticism from Kenyan authorities, who days later withdrew Kenyan peacekeepers from South Sudan. And in December, the UN Security Council failed to pass a resolution which would have enforced an arms embargo on South Sudan and would have expanded targeted sanctions on individuals in the country. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, whose last day of office is tomorrow, told reporters at his last press conference on December 16th that the UN should remain committed to ending atrocities in South Sudan.
I'm closely following the deteriorating situation in South Sudan. This week marks the third anniversary of the fighting. The country's leaders have betrayed their people's trust and squandered a peace agreement. Tens of thousands lie dead. Most immediately, my special advisor, Mr. Adama Dieng, has warned of the risk of genocide. We continue to push for access for life-saving relief, and I urge the Security Council to take more concerted action, including through punitive measures.
The U.S. drafted resolution needed 9 yes votes, but only received 7. U.S. allies, including Britain and France, noted their frustration with the U.N. Security Council's inability to pass the resolution, while Russia and China, who both abstained, said an embargo and sanctions would not bring an end to the conflict. Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. The governor of Yei River State says insecurity and the economic crisis have forced more than 6 of his newly appointed commissioners to stay in the state capital rather than reside in their respective counties. The commissioner of Mugwo County, who is also staying in Yei, confirms that rebel activities in his county have caused fear and panic among residents. First Vice President Taban Dengai is expected to visit Yei Town tomorrow to assure residents of the government's commitment to restore peace in the area. South Sudanese students in Uganda say they're unable to return home for the holidays this year because of rampant insecurity in the country. They also say they don't have the money to travel back to South Sudan, due in large part to the country's economic crisis. Many of the students enrolled at universities and other institutions of higher learning say this is the first time since they came to Uganda that they've been unable to be with their loved ones back home in South Sudan. And finally, South Sudanese forced to flee to Uganda because of the ongoing insecurity say they're doing all they can to learn Uganda's main language. They say knowing Luganda makes it easier to communicate with locals and integrate into Ugandan society. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Get Up by South Sudanese superstar Emmanuel Jal.
Yeah. They say all walk and no play. Boy. But you know what I say? I gotta get up. Suitcase from one place to another place. Hey, I get a chance sometimes. I make a few dollars sometimes. I'm thinking I'll be sober night in the town, having fun with my friends around. Hey, I gotta get up. Jay-Z with the wild like my
We've been listening to Emmanuel Jal and his song, Get Up. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Have a peaceful weekend. We hope you join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm all good with most people on me, even if your heart made of concrete. I know a girl named Tina, nicknamed Katina, never walked in a lab, but she rolled in a